So take it away.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Santiago. I work for Arup. It's an international consultancy company. I work in London, but we have offices most places, many places. And we've been doing Radiance for a lot of time. We have an office in New York that hopefully will be involved in next year's, I think, workshop. We do use Radiance quite a lot, and we've been using it for a while now. And we start young and then we get older. And so what I'm going to present now is mostly not done by me, but by our younger members of the team. So I shouldn't be here, that's what I'm trying to say. There should be somebody else here talking to you. Unfortunately, they couldn't come. They are trekking somewhere in the mountains. So having fun. The idea is that, there were people before me in the 90s already using Radiance. We and other people continue using it. Now the younger generations are using it, and we are always looking for new people to keep moving forward. The first case study was a calculation for a circadian lighting compliance for the WELL standard. I'm not sure if everybody's familiar with it. The WELL standard is a building standard that tries to verify whether buildings are good for from a health point of perspective, and it has lots of compliance points about air quality, food quality, water, and lighting as well. And for lighting, one of the preconditions is to comply with the circadian lighting requirement, which is, it's debatable. We are working with them, trying to give them feedback as to what needs to improve, because so far they only define circadian lighting as melanopic lighting, light intensity, and that's a bit limited. It's improved now. This was done a couple of years ago, last year, I think. It's a work in progress, but I think it's interesting the complexity of it. So at the moment, the requirement asks for at least 75% of workstations to have a 250 vertical equivalent melanopic lux for 4 hours per day, every day. It was not clear if the 4 hours needed to be in the morning or in the evening, which is a problem because you need the circadian entrainment in the mornings, not in the evenings. These 75% of workstations could, the 250 equivalent melanopic lux means that you take the a measurement of the spectrum and apply a different response curve, not the vision, the human vision, but the melanopic vision curve. So it has a different response, and when you integrate, you get a conversion factor between the vision spectrum and the melanopic spectrum, and then you can convert between normal luxes and melanopic luxes. And in this case, it's for daylighting combined with electric lighting. Both need to provide at least 250 vertical luxes. Alternatively, you can provide 150 equivalent melanopic luxes all day when occupied. So that's, some would say, even worse, because you get the stimulus the whole day, even in the evening. So people will go home and still stay awake. There's a lot of research being done, so, but for now, I'm concentrating on the calculation of this. So the problem we had is that we have an open plan office, and that's all we have. So we don't know where the desks are going to be, where the people are going to be sitting, which way they are going to be looking. So what we did is define a set of points, calculation points, across the plan, and calculate the equivalent melanopic lags in a vertical plane in, I think it was 8 directions. And what the graphic is showing is which directions show compliance with the daylight only, I mean, for the first requirement, considering only daylight. And we can see it's only a few points, and only when they are looking straight at the window. If we add the contribution from electric lighting, we get a few more points. And this is only requiring up to 4 hours per day, I mean, at least 4 hours per day. So you can see that some points are in the east and some points are in the west. So it will be at different times of the day. But there's still only very few points. And if we want to get more points complying, then we need to increase the electric lighting 230% for 4 hours every day. So this was the conclusion, but the main complexity of this is to define how much is enough, how many, we decided that this was sufficient flexibility so that people doing the interior design could position the desks and do and have enough flexibility to define the plan, but we did have to run a lot of calculations in many different directions. If we take the second type of compliance, the electric lighting, we can see that there are only few positions with few directions. And if we want everything to comply, we need to increase electric lighting by 150%, which is better than the previous case, but it has to be on all the time. So it's a trade-off between having a more expensive system that can provide 230% of the original design illuminance, but for only 4 hours per day, which will have a lower running cost, or have a less expensive system that can provide 150% of the original design lumens, but then we'll need to run all the time. I'm not sure what happened because I was not involved in the project, but I think they decided not to go for the well standard. That's the conclusion. The second case is a museum gallery. It's a very old museum, but they renovated one of the galleries. And there are two things that we did for the daylighting design in this case. The first one was to design the diffuse component so that it is more directional. Seems like a contradiction, but I will show it in a moment. And then the architect thought it was a good idea to allow some direct sunlight into the gallery, which caused a small commotion in the curators, and they almost died, but they survived. So what we did was to design the egg crate, the shading system in the exterior, so that the vertical component is stressed, is enhanced. In that way, people from the in the interior. Well, this we can do because it's in London and the latitude allows it. The sun never goes on top of the right straight above the building. But from the interior, when you look up, you can see the sky because the shading is open. And the diffuse light that comes in is more vertical because, well, what we wanted is to to highlight the main cases that were in the center. So to create this space where the center is brighter and the sides are less bright. But then we came with this idea to open some of the shading so that a little bit of sunlight can enter the building at times. We had to control it very carefully because it cannot go anywhere. It needs to go only in some parts of the exhibitions that can allow for the added exposure to daylight. So we redesigned one of the panels in the shading so that it's a little bit more open. And there were some trials and some optimization involved. Again, I'm not the best person to be showing this, but we did some optimization and the result was that there is a bit of sun patch that goes across the back wall once a day if there is sun. Again, in London, it's not every day, but... And then what we have to do is to check the cumulative effect of that over the whole year and see if that was acceptable for the curators. So we did an analysis of the sun patches and when it is entering it every in different sections. This is the result, the shading system. And this is once it's been installed in the gallery, they are still working on it. But you can see that the sun patch is there and it's working. The curators are relatively happy and confident that it's going to be safe. But it was really hard work to convince them that the amount and the direction of the sunlight is controlled so that it's not going to go anywhere else. I was thinking about this, and I thought there was one other museum I know that has direct sunlight entering the galleries. This is the Corning Museum of Glass in New York, in upstate New York, I think, in Corning. And this is a project that was done by our New York office. Again, and I was not involved, but I think it's a brilliant example because the quality of the exhibitions being glass pieces is perfect because it doesn't require too much conservation. It doesn't have very high requirements for conservation, and it shows much better the quality of the glass when there is some sunlight, direct sunlight entering the building. So instead of having a completely diffuse environment that would be boring or bland, allowing a bit of sunlight. Again, if it was all filled with sunlight, we wouldn't see the effect. It's the balance and the correct control of the sunlight entering the gallery that makes the effect. And the last example, I'm going to be short because I know we're late. Not because, anyway. This is an airport in the UK where you can see that the runway is right next to a highway, and the lighting system for the highway is being replaced. So the planning authorities, in order to approve the change in the lighting for the highway, required that a study is done to check that the lighting for the airport is not going to be disturbed. It's not going to be worse than before. And this was very complicated, mostly because we had to demonstrate the conditions on clear days and on foggy days. The mist material in radiance is a bit demanding, to say the least. And also we had hundreds of light sources, because the runway has, and we had to consider every light source. First, we couldn't get the IS files for the light sources because they are not there anymore. The factory doesn't exist anymore. We had to reconstruct them from the data we had. That was the whole project in itself. And then we had the problem that the mist material allows up to, I think, 6 or 8 sources in the definition. There is a limited way. It's not 500 anyway. So we thought many ways of doing this, running in steps and then adding the results. But we got a bigger computer, so we thought we could just do it at once. If we could only find a way to increase the number of sources that radiance can allow for that. So we asked for help. In this case, Giulio came in to help, and he found he found this definition in mmist.c. It says max list 32. That's the maximum number. So I thought it was 6. It's 32. We just changed it to 1200. And I'm not really sure how long it was running for, but it was a few weeks. And this is still work in progress because we still need to post-process the images, but this gives you an idea. It works, it worked after all. And we get the mist contribution, and it was running nicely. But that's it.
So should I just mention, since we ended on mist, that the idea of the mist material, and this was Rob's idea really, is to have a region or volume associated with the individual light sources. So rather than testing each ray against all the light sources, you just test them against the light sources that are probably relevant to the region you're in. I don't know if it causes problems for overlapping regions. I'd have to look at it if you have a lot of overlapping regions, but it would be faster to do it that way. I don't know. It wouldn't be as accurate.
I think it was checked, and it was not working.
Okay.
We did check. Another thing I forgot to mention is that because in the animation the observer is moving forward, we had to create regions that go smaller and smaller because the observer needs to be outside the region. So the script was generating a region at the same time that was...
Wow, okay. That's complicated.
Okay.
Okay, should we move on to the next one? Yeah, Rob.
Thank you.